Good morning. This is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit and survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder, board operator.
Today in the studio with me is Sabine Rear from the AT Lab with Community Vision. Good morning, Sabine.
Good morning, John. Hi, everybody. Yep, my name is Sabine Rear, and I'm the Accessibility Specialist at the Assistive Technology Lab at Community Vision.
Interesting. What is the AT Lab?
So the AT Lab, or Assistive Technology Lab, is a showroom space that is meant to allow people the opportunity to come into contact with, check out, and get help setting up and using assistive technology. And just for anybody who's not familiar with that term, we consider assistive technology to be any kind of tool or technology that helps people with disabilities engage with any aspect of their life, whether that be work or leisure or navigating their home, mobility, and lots of folks use assistive tech in a variety of ways. As a blind person, I move around the world with a cane, which I would consider assistive tech. Some people use, you know, we instruct people in things like software to help with reading and writing. We're doing a lot of supports for folks who are engaging with distance learning now for the first time. Smart home technology to help people interact with the appliances and fixtures in their homes, speech technology for folks who don't use natural speech, all kinds of stuff. So that's the brief assistive tech definition, and the AT Lab has been around for coming up on 2 years now here, built into Community Vision's beautiful, super accessible Seven Corners Collaborative, which John and Dina, I know y'all have visited me at last year when we were allowed to visit each other in places.
Yeah, it was nice to see somebody in person. I sure am starting to miss that. I am wondering, do you also deal with people's wheelchairs as well?
Generally, that's something we make referrals for, because wheelchairs are such a specialized type of tech and really individualized to the person. The showroom is meant to give people an idea of what's out there, but you know, if we were to have all the assistive tech in the world, we'd be bigger than the biggest warehouse. So one big role that we have is providing referrals and helping people get to the specialized stuff that they need. So when someone's looking for a chair or a chair mount, something large like that, we can consult and make recommendations, but we have one chair in the space for people to look at, but generally we want them to get down to as specific a tool as they can for something as integral to life as mobility.
So you guys work on the smaller tech, not the larger tech, like if somebody needs a specialized bed or something else of that nature, you'd refer them to a different area.
Yeah, we just don't have the space to accommodate stuff like that. But yeah, always increasing the number of business cards we have to pass on to people and referrals. That's a big part of our work.
And it's nice to know for people who might walk in and think can help them out with their wheelchairs.
Yeah, we definitely, we do what we can. And Carrie, one of our directors, who is our occupational therapist, definitely has some experience working on chairs. And we have some mounts that people can try for their devices. But yes, I think that is definitely something that we generally pass along to a referral who's better suited to help with that.
All right. By the way, how are you doing today? I mean, getting off topic. How has this pandemic been affecting you, Sabine, personally? I mean, you've said that you are visually impaired, and I'm just kind of like wondering, were you probably doing Zoom and all this other stuff long before we were all forced to do it? Or is this all kind of really like new to you and you're just like, oh man, do I have to adapt?
This is all new. I definitely, I have to take a lot of screen breaks. I was working in the lab before where I wouldn't have to look at the screen all the time. biggest impact for me is that as a blind person, obviously I don't drive. And because we work with a medically fragile population, I'm trying not to take the bus, trying to avoid places that seem like a high risk for picking something up. So my world has gotten really small. I'm kind of living only in the spaces that I can access on foot, which is okay, but weird. And then on a personal note, I mean, I'm a very social person. My partner is a more introverted person. And so he's working upstairs. He's doing just fine with this, but I'm like really, I'm struggling. It's much, my disposition is less well-suited to hanging out in the house. It's hard to be stuck in your house all the time, but yeah, it's definitely been, because I can't see very far, I wear a mask all the time. I'm not like, I won't see people within the 6 feet, right? So I want to make sure that I'm doing my due diligence, not making anybody nervous.
I want to thank you for giving us an insight.
Yeah, no, that's happy to share. And
what is your position in the lab?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I've been at the lab for about a year now, and my title is accessibility specialist. And I actually hold two kind of complementing positions. So my time is split between my work in the lab, which is my office all the time, as the accessibility specialist. And then also, I am the sort of executor of a contract. Community Vision has a contract with the Northwest ADA Center, which is our regional ADA information center. And I answer questions about the ADA for them as well as their technical assistance specialist. But since we're here to talk about the lab, just to say my work with the ADA Center helps me be able to answer more questions, have sort of knowledge coming from two sides.
Yeah, for those who may not know what ADA is, could you say it, you know, we use a lot of acronyms or alphabet.
Oh, yeah.
And some people just don't know what it means.
Absolutely. And I made a note to myself to not use any acronyms today without explaining them. So thank you very much. The Americans with Disabilities Act, or the ADA, is the single biggest piece of civil rights legislature put into place in 1990, covering and protecting the rights of people with disabilities in public space and employment. And for your listeners' edification, I'll say that the federally, it's mandated that each region have an information center. So that's what the Northwest ADA Center does. We provide peer information in as unbiased a way as possible. We don't give legal advice or do advocacy, but we make referrals and help people get the information that they need regarding the ADA in order to make decisions, whether that's business owners, people with disabilities, advocates, state or local governments. So that's what that work entails.
So you have a lot more information than just the tech lab to give out.
Yes. Yeah. And they often pair well together. So I'm happy to get to combine those knowledge sets to give people the information that they need.
Ooh, that's nice to know.
Yeah.
Please go on with, did we finish up with what?
Yeah, let me just briefly, as the accessibility specialist, my role is to support the directors. So we're a team of three. The AT lab was opened by our pair of directors, Kim Elliott and Carrie Luce, who are a speech pathologist and a OT or occupational therapist, respectively. So within the lab, they do consultations, both paid and pro bono, depending on the situation. They also execute the grants that support us and our operation. And together we manage the open hours and provide information on the phone line and also in person during normal times about AT. So my role is to support them. I run our open hours when we have them. And lately I've been doing the administrative work around our loan program, which is a program that we recently launched that allows us to let people borrow assistive tech that we have in the lab and try it out. to help them make an informed decision about tech that they might want to purchase or get purchased for them. So that's been the bulk of my work lately.
So, loan program, about what items can people check out? How long can they check them out for? And what is the liability if it should get damaged outside the lab?
Absolutely. So our loan program is brand new, funded by the Reeve Foundation. We're really excited to be working on it. We have a growing loan closet right now. The types of tech we have span from iPads, Chromebook, tools like that, eye gaze and head mouse devices, down to switches, keyboard stands, adaptive keyboards and mice, key guards for people using iPads. And yeah, so it's quite a wide variety. On our website, we have information about what we loan. And to the point of liability, we allow people to borrow items on an inquiry basis for 2 weeks. During the loan process, we do ask that folks, as a requirement for a loan, sign a liability form that they will take on fiscal responsibility for any damaged or lost items. So that is a required element of the loan process. All that's established up front.
How did you get your position?
Great question. So like I said, I've been with the lab for a year now. It's actually was my job anniversary just last week, which was very exciting. I came to this position from the school district. I had been an administrative assistant with the school district for a couple of years and was looking for a position that would connect me with my community a little bit more and allow me to work more directly with both the community that I was part of and just support the Portland community in general more directly. I would say that I got this position both because I have a lot of administrative skills that have been really well aligned with the projects that Kim and Carrie have wanted to do in the lab. And I've been able to support that based on those strengths and also based on my unpaid work. I do a lot of work both for myself and for community organizations outside of my paid time. And then also because I come to this job with lived experience as a person with a disability. And I think that was something that they were happy to have represented in the lab. Outside of this work, I'm also an organizer with the Portland Zine Symposium and an artist. So a lot of my work around both that organizing and maintaining my personal artistic and general like creative engagement, I think was a strength that I bring to the lab and to my administrative work.
And then you said you're an artist on top of this. I'm going to be a little bit curious because I like art myself. And so, you know, I'm kind of curious, what kind of artist are you?
Yeah, I'm a cartoonist. I draw black and white autobiographical comics, mostly about disability in public space, sometimes about pro wrestling. I got into that just as I was finishing school. When I was in college, I did some work around women's studies and disability studies and was trying to figure out how I could best convey the things that I learned and the things that I was grappling with in a way that was accessible, in a way that would make sense to other people. And I learned about zines. I was introduced to the Independent Publishing Resource Center, which you may be familiar with. I know that Rachel is also a friend of the IPRC. If folks aren't familiar with it, it's a wonderful self-publishing space here in Portland. So I was introduced to the IPRC, started making zines, really enjoyed the handmade aspect and the sort of creative control of writing and drawing. You know, the ability to, as a visually impaired person, like work in black and white and express my own sort of experience with aesthetics and visual experience. So that's something that I've also been doing for about 5 years now. I completed a certificate program at the IPRC around self-publishing and then went on to teach it. This would have been the end of my first year teaching there, but unfortunately the pandemic has made it such that my my students were unable to complete their in-person work. So someday we will all finish our comics, and for now I'm, you know, stuck doodling inside.
So does that, you know, when you were talking about comics, I was thinking, oh, maybe you have something published. Maybe we've seen it out there. So you haven't published anything yet.
I've self-published quite a bit. So I've made handmade zines, and they are available all over town. Less so now because I haven't had a chance to reprint anything. But yes, I have not done anything that you would find under the name of another publisher, but my work is out there.
It is out there. Do you know where, I mean, let's say somebody's a little bit interested in finding this work. Is there any stores or any locations you can give us that would enable us to purchase said items?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find links to my Etsy shop at my website, which is www.michaelsabine.com. But my stuff is also, I'm going to say these shops, and I'm not sure how many of them are open, but at Powell's and at Bridge City Comics, and I believe also at Books with Pictures on Division, and at Floating World Comics. Again, all of that is dubious because I haven't had a chance to drop work off at any of these places in months. So the likelihood that they have a lot of it is slim, but it's been there. So those are places you could look.
When you say PALS, there are lots of PALS stores around, no offense. Mm-hmm. Which PALS would that be?
I believe the one on Burnside.
One on Burnside. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Boys, we are learning so much about you today.
What a treat.
Yeah, I just hope you don't mind sharing.
Oh, no, totally fine.
Okay, so just out of curiosity, we are kind of curious how the COVID-19 affected the lab.
Absolutely.
I know I asked you about your personal life, but
how I tried to separate those things, knowing that we would talk about this too. So personal stuff aside, we have not been, so the lab has been closed after the shutdown order came down. You know, we serve a medically fragile population. We want to make sure people are safe. So we've been closed. Our open hours are not available. I go into the lab about once a week to tidy things up and manage the loan program. The way we're doing that in order to keep things safe is I'll go in and put together whatever items someone is borrowing and then just allow them to pick them up during those open hours, during the day that I'm there, contactless. And then, so I'm there to hand off and receive, but otherwise the lab is closed. We've been doing quite well with that. I'm quite proud. We were worried initially that launching the loan program right before a pandemic was going to be a problem, but I'm very proud of the way we've figured it out. And I think we've given people access to a lot of stuff that's wound up being even more helpful in the context of lockdown and sort of limited access. We've also been involved with a fair amount of support for folks, kiddos who are doing distance learning, because a lot of people are navigating the technology around distance learning and the specific access challenges that it poses for the first time. A lot of our sort of phone line conversations and a lot of the questions that we've been getting from community members have been around supporting distance learning for kids. So that's been a significant focus. We also are working to disperse through a grant we received from the CARES Act money. We are working to identify organizations who have clients who are in need of iPads to use as both assistive devices and to connect and avoid, you know, the sort of isolation that a lot of people are experiencing right now. So those have been some of our big projects, but the most important thing we want people to know is that our phone line is open, our email line is open, even though we can't see folks in person. Kim and Carrie are still taking consultations. I'm still available to help with support around the loan program and around AT. So we're here and we miss seeing folks, but we're doing our best distantly.
So, on that subject, I was kind of curious. You said that there's a no contact handoff. I'm wondering if that means you leave it at your back door inside the building, or is there like a spot for?
We're kind of doing it on a case-by-case basis, depending on the level of complexity. So in some situations, someone's borrowing something that requires a little bit of instruction. So we, you know, put everything in a bag, wipe it down, leave the bag out, and then we have a distant conversation about any kind of onboarding information someone might need. This technology is often quite expensive and complex and specialized, so we're not like leaving it outside of the building.
And have you been using a lot of Zoom and Skype and Facebook Messenger and everything else like that?
Yep, lots and lots of Zoom. I believe the majority of Kim and Carrie's consultations are either by phone or by Zoom. And when we set up, you know, loan pickups or a loan form signings, things like that, a lot of that is either by phone or by Zoom, by email. Yeah. Sort of crossing a lot of wires platform-wise.
Our advocacy interactions we've had to use, mostly we've been using Zoom, but there has been some discussion about using things like Skype or Facebook Messenger for various reasons, you know, like some of them will allow for closed caption automatically. And, you know, I mean, there's different reasons to use different social medias. And I'm just kind of like wondering if you have to navigate multiple forms of social media. And if so, how are you dealing with using multiple interfaces on social media?
That's a great question. Yeah, luckily for the lab, social media isn't a big part of it. Carrie updates our Facebook, but we, unless someone really needed to use a platform like Facebook, I think for the most part, people have been very comfortable using Zoom or using the phone. Honestly, using the phone is great. Getting a break from the screen has been really nice. So I've enjoyed opportunities where people have, like my ADA work, where we just talk on the phone, unless that's an access issue. Another restriction for us is that, particularly with regards to Kim and Carrie's work, or with regards to loans where we're getting people's personal information, things have to be secure. We have to follow HIPAA. So we have to make sure to use platforms that have appropriate data security and allow us to take people's information in a way that's safe and appropriate.
Yeah, and we've stumbled across that before ourselves. So, I mean, trying to make all of this work is excessively complicated.
Yes.
How is the AT Lab funded?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the lab, as I said, we're a small team. It's just me, Kim, and Carrie, the two directors. We're housed in within Community Vision, which has been a nonprofit for a long time. They're entering their 31st year, which is very exciting. Here at the Seven Corners Collaborative, which is their new building. So the AT Lab is funded primarily by grants and donations, similarly to Community Vision. We take in we take on grants related to projects as well. So I mentioned our CARES Act funding, which is a grant to distribute assistive technology to support folks who have been impacted by COVID around isolation and disability. We also recently received a grant from the Oregon Community Foundation. And I also mentioned that our loan closet is funded by the Reeve Foundation. So I would say piecing together grants as well as individual donations or group donations is the bulk of the source of our funding. Kim and Carrie also do paid consultations. That's a part of their work. But that represents, I think, a relatively small chunk of our funding overall.
And do you also do paid consultations as well?
I don't. So their consultations are related specifically to their areas of specialization, occupational therapy and speech therapy. My role is to support our free programs, including the loan program and Open Lab. My specialization being like on the administrative side, on the sort of community focus side, I'm providing those sort of making connections to those free programs. So the AT Lab is located at the Seven Corners Collaborative, which is the building that Community Vision and all of its programs operate out of, as well as some other related organizations, including FACT Oregon, which is the parent information center, and the Northwest Access Fund has a desk there. So it's quite a lovely building, and someday we would love to give you all a tour. We'll see how soon that is. The AT Lab's in the first floor, and the building, Seven Corners, is on where Division Ladd and Southeast 20th meet. It's at 2475 Southeast Ladd. Again, no open hours right now, but just for future reference. There are also videos on our website where you can get a virtual tour. So the AT Lab's website is www.cv-atlab. That's Community Vision AT Lab, cv-atlab.org. And there you'll find information on our loan closet, some of our videos, informational videos, as well as tours to information on how to get AT. So we've just launched an AT funding page with some of that information, as well as our loan closet. And you can find our contact information there as well.
Ah, thank you. Do you also have a phone number?
Yes, our phone number is 503-292-4964.
Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule and come and talk to us and, you know, tell us all about the AT Lab and kind of inform us of what it does. Yeah.
Absolutely. This was such a treat. Thanks for having me. I had a great time chatting with you and would be happy to come back.
Yeah.
That's the end of Disability Justice. Since we cannot be fully aware of everybody's difficulties within the community, we would really like it if you would send us your email, disabilityjustice@kbu.org.
Also, we're always looking for fun, inexpensive things to do out in the community. Go to disabilityjustice@kboo.org to contact us and give us your ideas.